Good morning, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the 9/11 preview show. We're doing a very exciting tribute show on Monday evening, September 11th. And this is a show that we've laid out here this morning to explain what's going to happen on that evening and give you all the details. And I'm joined by Amy Domestico. She's with thebluedoodle.com. That's her website, and she's been my partner in putting this together, which is a very exciting process. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good. Very good. So I'd like to, I know that Dale's going to probably be joining us in a bit, but okay. I thought we would take this opportunity to talk about what's going to happen on Monday night and take this opportunity this morning. So I guess what time is the show is going to start on Monday?
The show is going to start 7 p.m. on Monday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Right.
And we're going to have on people from different websites that have created tributes to the 9/11 victims. And Dale Rowe is going to be on, and he is the creator of the 2996 Project. And we have to we're going to be getting together some tributes that were written by people for the 9/11 victims.
Excellent. And hold on, I think Dale is on. Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
How are you, Dale?
Pretty good.
Very good. Thank you for joining me this morning. You're on air, and Amy Domestico is on air as well.
Good morning.
Hi, Amy.
And we were just talking about the format for Monday night, and we're very excited about what's going to take place. So what's happening here is we have a show. It's going to start at 7 p.m. We don't have a set time limit. I mean, right now I think we have it set for 3 hours. There'll be a combination of readings and writings and poetry from various websites. And Dale, who's the creator of the 2996 Project, will be one of the contributing websites that we're pulling material from. But we're also going to have an opportunity for people to call in and give the audience their personal point of view, where they were, what they saw, what their emotion was. And I think it's very important to do that. And I don't think it's properly been done, or it has been done in the 5 years. You know, I'm a little older than most. I used to not say that, but of course we age. But I'm 47, and I was 4 years old when Kennedy, or 5 years old when, actually, no, I'm sorry. I was like 6 years old when Kennedy was, 4 years ago when Kennedy was shot, and the question was always, you know, where were you when it happened? And I think the World Trade Center disasters are going to be a similar thing, don't you?
Definitely. It's going to be the next generations. Where were you when it happened? Definitely.
Yeah, I agree. So we're very excited by this because we're able to combine original writings that have been submitted to these various websites, which are not professional. They're amateur, most instances, amateur writings. And we're also integrate these phone calls, which Blog Talk Radio can accommodate. So the first contributor that I'd like to talk about is Dale, who's representing the 2996 Project, and he's with us this morning. So, Dale, maybe you can explain to our audience what the 2996 Project is, how you got involved, where you're based, and essentially what the 2996 Project is.
Well, the term I've heard thrown around with a lot of the participants is a coalition. It's really kind of a coalition of mostly amateur bloggers who signed up to write a tribute for a single victim of 9/11. When you sign up, there's a sign-up form, and immediately, as soon as you hit the button, you get a name and a little bit of biographical information of one of the victims. And you also get a few links so that you can do a little bit of research on your victim. And I don't hand out the research to anybody. I just give them a few leads, and it's up to them to do the research. But I've had, at this point, about 3,300 people sign up to write a tribute to one of the 9/11 victims. And, you know, they've gone ahead and they've done their own research, and now the tributes are starting to be posted.
Terrific. And how do they look? Have you seen some of them?
I've seen some of them. You know, not surprisingly, I guess there's a pretty big range. But I'm sure there's a bias from anyone who was an adult when 9/11 happened. I'm sure there's a bias toward thinking that they're pretty darn good, but I'm an amateur writer, and having read some of these, I got to say, I'm very impressed with the quality of some of them, not only the quality of the writing, but the level of research that some of these amateur bloggers have done. I know for a fact that a few of the people that I've had conversations with just through email about the project have done 10, 15 hours of research to write their single post for 9/11.
That's incredible. And how's it going to work now? People, they're submitting this now, and is this information is going to be available? When is it going to be available on the 2996 website for people to see?
Well, I'm updating the 2996 website a few times a day at this point. And there's if you go to the 2996 website, there's a link for a list of participants. And actually, now that the project's about to take off, I'm going to make that link a little more prominent, right up on top of the front page, so it's easier to get to. But if you go to the list of participants, it is just a list of, at this point, 3,300 names. It lists the victim and has a link to the blog where their tribute is going to be. And as people are letting me know that their tributes are coming in, I'm going to replace those links with the links to the actual tributes. But on 9/11, or a little bit before, somebody could just go to that page and randomly click on some blogs or find some blogs that they know and click on those, and they can just go read what people have written about different people.
Okay. And you started this when, this website? And what, by the way, please tell everybody what your URL is.
The URL for the website is www.dcroe.com/2996.
And when did you start this site?
I started this site around mid-June sometime. I originally started the whole project on my own personal blog. I really wasn't sure how it was going to be received. Not a lot of people read my blog, and I just didn't know how many people would be signing up for something like this. And I think the first post on my blog was on May 31st. And within about a week and a half or 2 weeks, I had maybe a couple hundred people signed up, and I decided that it would make more sense to put up another blog where I could manage all this. So it's on my own web space still, but it's a slightly separate entity so that people wouldn't confuse. You know, I really didn't get into it to publicize my own blog, so I kind of removed it from there, and I put it on the web in its own location.
Why did you get into
it from there?
Like, what motivated? Now, where are you based?
My family and I live in Raleigh, North Carolina.
And what motivated you to begin this site?
Well, not any specific thing. It's just I was. You know, in the 20th anniversary of the Challenger explosion happened a few months ago, I wrote a tribute on there to what happened and, you know, where was I when it happened and that sort of thing. And it's hard to say I enjoyed the process, but it helped a little bit to understand, put everything in perspective. So I was planning on writing something for 9/11, but I kept coming up against the same roadblock. I don't know what to write. That's a big day. It's a big event to try to encapsulize in one post. And I kept thinking, well, there's 3,000 people. What am I going to do? If I'm going to list their names, that's going to be the whole post. If I'm going to do something specific for somebody, that shortchanges everybody else. And I said, it just doesn't make any sense. I can't write that tribute for 3,000 people. And I sort of tossed out the idea kind of just in conversation to my fiance, and she's like, well, you think that's a good idea to get 3,000 people together to each write a tribute, why don't you try it? The worst that's going to happen is it's not going to work out. So I went ahead and posted it, and like I said, I just posted it on my own blog as a kind of, let's throw this out there and see what happens. And after a while, things like this, I guess they just get a life of their own.
Yeah. Well, what we'd like, you know, we're obviously looking forward to reading some of these pieces on air, and in fact, I think you've even noted on your site that if any of the contributors would like to read their own pieces on air, they can call into the show. And that's one of the things we're going to do here. We have the ability at Blog Talk Radio to have, you know, of course, we have unlimited listeners because people can stream wherever they are in the world, in fact, listening to the show. But if, if you'd like to call in with a question or a comment or just tell us where you were or what you feel, we're going to have time allotted in our in the schedule for that. But if there are particular writers that wrote pieces on the 2996 project, then we would recommend they do so.
Yeah, I've put out the call on my blog to let people know that when the show's on, they can call in. And I've also asked them to go ahead and start posting their tributes now. The original concept was that they all go up on the actual day of 9/11, but I know that a lot of these people are kind of anxious. They want to get them out for the weekend so more people can read the tributes, that sort of thing, which I think is great, and I think it's totally in the spirit of what 2996 was trying to do. So I'm encouraging them to go ahead and get those tributes out. And I've had several people, since I announced that 2996 was going to be a part of the show on Monday, who have been sending the tributes in, not necessarily for themselves to read, but in the hopes that we might want to read those on air.
Excellent.
And we're some of them are great.
Right. It's excellent. We're going to be going through some of them. Now, Amy, there's other websites that we're drawing content from. Maybe you can go through some of those websites that we've assembled.
Yes, there are a lot of 9/11 tribute websites that we found on the website. None like Dale's with all the written tribute from people. It's more of survivors and friends writing in and writing small tributes to people that didn't make it out. And one of them is www.9-11heroes.us. Then there's www.september11victims.com, and then there's Survivor Recounts, which is with coping.org, and that's two doctors put together a website to help people cope with the aftermath of 9/11, and they are at www.coping.org, and then there's Johnston 9/11 Tribute Site, which is www.johnston.com, and he was a person who put together a lot of video that you could see on his website and photo albums and stuff like that.
There's certainly no shortage of material, and we're going through it. I have personally reached out to the folks at Cantor Fitzgerald, Aon. We're reaching out to the New York Fire Department, New York Police Department, the Port Authority. We're working with a PR company, RLM, Richard Lammer, PR, and Richard, they're going to help get the word out to try to get some readers, some more high-profile readers who may read some of this original material. But we'd like to speak with the people from the fire department and police department and maybe give them an opportunity to, some of them, to get on air, to either tell some stories, but read some pieces maybe related to their own family, you know, their own members of these organizations that were so closely affected by what went on. And I think the other thing that I think is important about this day and about what we can do this evening on Monday night is how each of us, how we're all affected. I mean, I know that we have actually in our blog, my blog entry on Blog Talk Radio will be posting all of the contributing websites, and that'll all be there, and that'll be up by the end of today, in addition to the 296 and the other websites that Amy mentioned. So all the URLs will be there. Anyone who has a question, would like to contribute information, can send me an email at alanlevy@blogtalkradio.com, or we have a website set up with the PR company called blogtalkradio@rlmpr.com. That's blogtalkradio@rlmpr.com. I originally started putting this together when I had the we were lucky to have a poet who was called the Pod Poet. I don't know his name. His name is Pod Poet. He was a host on Blog Talk Radio, one of the early hosts, in fact, on Blog Talk Radio. I think we were up for 2 days at the end of July, and he was a registered host. And I looked at his site, and what he did was assemble poetry from the Katrina disaster of a year earlier. The website solely dedicated to it, similar to what Dale has with the 2996 project. It was fascinating, and the Pod Poet came on air and just read 10 pieces of poetry and talked about the background of each of these pieces, who wrote it, where it came from, when it was written, and so on. And it varied. It was written, some was written by people that were on rooftops, literally, when the Katrina disaster hit, and other people, and he's based in San Diego, so there was stuff written around the time of the event. There were pieces written a year later. But it was so moving, and I felt it was a perfect platform for us to do something on 9/11 tribute. And that's why this show has evolved, essentially. You know,
I got an email from the Pod Poet, actually, last night.
Yes.
And his name is Stephen Schultz.
Oh, he's
got a name.
He's unmasked.
Yeah, he's been unmasked. He's got a name.
And what did he have to say?
Well, he actually sent me a poem that was a tribute to 9/11, and I can read it if you want.
Yeah, why don't you read the poem?
Okay, he sent a poem, and this is going to go up on the BlueDoodle.com for 9/11, and he's also going to be calling in on Monday evening. I know he's going to be flying home Monday evening, but he's going to catch us while he's in the airport. And the poem is titled Little Fly. There used to be a little fly who saw the world through all her eyes. On everything touched by her little feet, instead of germs, she brought a treat. She had the power to change things by spreading love and all it brings. One day she landed on George Bush, then caught the jet stream and was pushed across the Atlantic to the Middle East, determined to replace hate with peace. She fell from the sky as if heaven sent and brought to Saddam Hussein a certain present. Landing on one of his big toes, that little fly changed two foes and turned them into two men who loved each other as friends. Soldiers returned from overseas, and all the prayers on all the knees were heard and answered that very day. You can be sure, in its own way, peace reigned over the earth, and the little fly gave birth to a dozen more just like herself, when progeny will always help. Spread the germ known as love, sent from somewhere up above. Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, and God in the sky, all of them and many more are the fly. Pod Poet, copywritten 2005.
Very good.
Yes.
He's very talented, and he speaks. His voice is quite amazing. So if he could call in and read some poetry or read some other pieces that he's assembled or we've assembled, then that would be terrific. One of the other things that I think is important about that night, which I'd like to do, is for people to talk about where they were. And I don't think we're able to fully digest the importance of that day and the effect it's had on our life. We know what's gone on with the world affairs and since then, and we live in a different world, and it's not a safe world. But that day was surreal. And if I may, for just a moment, talk about what I saw. Because I live around 10 miles from the World Trade Center. And, of course, we're getting people who are contributing live around the world. So people have been touched by this, but around the world. But living so close to it was, I think the word is surreal. Because, first of all, it was very, very confusing. It was, of course, around 8:30 in the morning, 8:45, the first plane hit. I was outside. And I go into my house. It was a beautiful day, like today in New York. A gorgeous blue sky, clear blue sky. Watching the first plane it hit, looking at the tower. And so many people saw the second plane go in. And it was stunning. It was simply stunning to watch this live go into the building. Now, because we live 10 miles away, you kind of wonder, okay, what's going on? You know, is this Armageddon? Is this the third... Let's hide. You know, I live in the suburbs, but still, it's just shocking. And then you kind of think about what's happening over there, the mayhem. Of course, you see it on TV and you see the images. But was so confusing and powerful and still shocking, and I don't think I've even fully, we really have never fully talked about it, was what happened around noon. Because around noon, all the kids were let out of school, and the kids came home. I have three children. My two young daughters at the time were 5 years old, 7 years old. They, of course, heard what went on, but what do you say? You know, what do you tell them? Now, there were people that lived in our communities that died in the World Trade Center, that were in the building, that worked for Cantor Fitzgerald or worked for Aon. But what was also shocking was the people, the friends of mine, the neighbors that live around the corner that walked home. Now, they didn't get there at noon, of course, because they couldn't get out. The city shut down. These people, friends of mine, worked downtown, witnessed people jumping from the World Trade Center, witnessed it, walked from New York 10 miles through the city, got to New Jersey, maybe were able to get a ride, and they came home from work. Everyone was mulling around the streets that night around here, kind of trying to make sense of this whole thing. And we couldn't, of course. You can't make sense of it. And even 5 years later, you can't make sense of this. But these people, friends of mine who witnessed this, it was just shocking. And
they had to walk home after that?
They had to walk home because you couldn't. The city shut down. Not only they had to walk home, they had to walk all the way up to the George Washington Bridge and walk over the bridge, and then, because all the bridges into the city were shut that day, and all the mass transit, because they were afraid there was more bombs, or there was more activity going on. But what do you tell your children? And what do you think these people, they feel? Look, we know the people perished in the building, but what about the many people that witnessed this, who are scarred? And so it's still difficult to understand, of course. It's difficult to tell your children. And it was certainly difficult that day. And I think that what we're doing that day, and the ability to read some of these passages and kind of go back and hear some of these stories, is going to be very profound.
Yeah, I have a couple of recounts here. I'm not going to read it now. It's too long. I'll read it on Monday night. But it's called I'm Alive, and it's the story of a survivor from Kemper Insurance. And it's an amazing story. It's about 2-3 pages long. And I'll go over it and edit it a little bit, just to cut out some of it. But it's from the beginning.
Well, we have a few moments. I mean, do you want to read a little of it?
Yeah,
or?
I can read a little of it.
Okay.
It starts out, it says, I'm alive. That should say it all, but it misses by a mile. So many emotions that I expect tomorrow to be the hardest when I find to start out which friends I won't ever see again. I had a meeting on Long Island and was too tired to get out of bed. I came very close to just driving directly to Long Island, but forced myself to make it to the office first, just for an hour or two. For some reason, I didn't park in the usual open-air lot adjacent to the World Trade Center. I figured I would save a couple of Kemper's dollars and walk a couple of blocks. I told the garage attendant I would be back around 10:30. Up to the office on what used to be the 36th floor of what used to be the One World Trade Center. Business as usual. Adrian Adi was in the office from New Jersey. I had too much to do even to tease him about showing up in New York. Cindy and Aklima hadn't made it in. Pretty much a normal midweek workday, 8:30. I call home to see if I can catch Melody and Lara before they head out for school. As usual, I get the machine. I ramble along enough for someone to pick up. Today it works. Lara answers. My morning is brightened by our little conversation. After telling each other that I love you, she asks, I want to talk to Mommy. I tell her no, I'll talk to her later. The computer is booting up as I update my voicemail messages for the day. I go to the file area to hunt for the files of the moment. I have a few files in my hand, and I'm silently cursing the fact that I can't find a few others. Then whump. The noise is loud and distant but ominous. The buildings are designed to sway in high winds, but this felt like a giant fist of God had slammed us to the side. It almost feels like the building was going to slowly topple right. First thought, a bomb, plane, whatever it was, the building did not just sway back into a normal position. The whump turns into a lingering rumble as the plane continues to blast through the building and the fireball explodes. A harmonic resonance seems to have started. It feels like an earthquake and looks like file cabinets may begin to topple. The unnatural and strong swaying and rumbling earthquake continues for what feels like more than a minute. Adrian is out of his office, I'm out of the file area, and everyone else in our area is suddenly gathered in front of the main workplace. Earthquakes do not occur in just one building. The rain of glass and debris from above roars outside our own window. At this point, I'm convinced the building is going to fall and that we are going to die. I'm thinking, how many seconds will it take? Someone asks, what should we do? But they all knew the answer, so we head for the exit nearby. We are above five floors down before the first alarms are heard. Somehow the shaking stopped, and we feel like everything is going to be okay for us. We and others in the stairs finally voice our thoughts of death and start guessing that it was likely a plane because of the glass from above. People were great when workers diving from the stairwell from another floor looked panicked and could start a stampede. We directed them to slow down. At other times, we got people to keep moving. Various little emergencies on the stairs got handled together. Things start slowing down because of the crowd. We start to smell smoke. Maybe it was a bomb after all. Somewhere around 25, we finally see building personnel. They are directing us onto the floor because the smoke is getting a little thicker and the air is better on the floor. I'm with Adrian. We hang close to the door out of the way to wait for Kathy, then Joyce. I stay by the door. I'm taller than Adrian and could possibly spot Maria and Wanda better if they are still behind us. People are ignoring the door people and filing past the door. We decide we are going too. Kathy was able to see on a TV on that floor that it was a plane after all. Terrorists. Maria and Wanda haven't made it to us yet. With the other floors merging into the stairwells, they could be a long way behind. It could only clog the flow to do anything other than keep moving. So we kept moving. Some floors below, we all make room for some burn victims to descend past us. There are two of them. They are black from the burned jet fuel, and they look numb. The first looks relatively better, though he holds his arm in front in obvious pain. The second is an African-American woman with blisters and almost melted patches on her face. A large swath of her arm looks Caucasian, where her pigmented skin was burned off. Sheets of it look like they will soon follow. As they descend, we are also making a path for firefighters to ascend. A group of about 12 pass us by. We probably made way for them to die. I understand 200 of the 400 responding firefighters are dead as I write. The last flights are slippery from the current of water cascading down the stairs. No one is particular about clothes or shoes. We finally splash out of the stairwell into our first view of the plaza, and it looks like a war zone. Glass, debris, burning chunks of who knows what, ash. We are all on the move, no time or inclination for a closer look. Kathy says she sees bodies. We shoot across 30 feet of no man's land to the overhang of another building with arms over our heads. We enter and start heading across the pedestrian bridge to the World Financial Center by the river. No one brought anything. Jackets, wallets, keys, etc. are still 36 floors above. No one has a cell phone to let loved ones know we are okay. At this point, it's Adrian, Kathy, Joyce, and me. We still believe that Wanda and Maria are somewhere behind us. Though it would be pointless to look for them, Kathy is obviously shaken by the bodies in the plaza and by the jumpers. I'm going to look for a phone, I said. Call Andrea and let her know I'm okay. Adrian responded, wait, you don't know my number. What town? He yells it out. Then we're listed. Got it. I think I yell something about calling everyone as we part. I dive in the area by Moran's because security isn't tight yet. No phones. Security tightens and I can't get back to the others. No place is open and whatever public phones are near are thronged. I think to get to the other side of town to go to a friend's office to use their phone. I'm going to skip ahead because it's very long. He got out a little bit further away from the buildings and he says, I finally see the holes in the buildings. I just came from fire in both buildings. It finally hits me. I'm not only the only one with tears. I can see the area that those holes in the fire zone covers and know that hundreds or thousands are dead. How can anyone above those fires get past them? Oh, my God, someone shrieks. They're jumping. I can't get myself to look. And I'm going to skip past this.
Okay, I think we got it.
Yeah, and it goes all the way back down. It keeps going, and it goes all the way to when he gets home.
Well, we'll have that read in full Monday night. And who wrote that? Is it anonymous? Or
the only thing I have here is a survivor from Kemper Insurance. There was no name on it.
Okay. I mean, this is it. This is why we're doing this. And, you know, these things have to be heard. I mean, they just have to be heard. So I think that's good. And I mean, that's a talk about a moving piece.
Yes. We have a friend that made it out of the building. He was on the 34th floor, I think, and he won't even talk about it to this day. So.
Well, if we can maybe touch base with this individual and this person would like to read it himself or herself, I guess it's a he, then we would like him to do that. But what I like to do is wrap the show up at this point. We'll reconvene Monday night, 7 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com. It should be a very moving night and one that I hope will achieve its objective objectives, which is to make sure we fully understand and are able to talk about what went on. I want to thank you, Dale and Amy, for being here this morning, and we'll speak to you Monday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night. Bye.